So for the last 5 years since we started Sports 360 AZ, and even here on Fox Sports Arizona, I've talked about concussions, and some of you have sent me notes saying, enough. Well, there's never enough when it comes to your health. And Dr. Javier Cardenas is someone who has been in the Valley for a number of years. I met Javier, I don't know, it was like 5-6 years ago, and, and Javier does quite a bit. He created the brain book, the Barrow Brain Book. Javier created the Barrow Concussion and Brain Injury Center at Dignity Health and St. Joseph's Hospital Medical Center. I'm reading my notes because it's a long, long title. We'll get through it, right? But the bottom line is, this is the guy when it comes to brains and concussions and football and soccer. And to one end of the extreme, is it time to be nervous? Is it time to not be nervous about it? So I asked Javier to come in. We're just going to wrap. This is one of those things where we just talk. Because at one end of the spectrum, this is a huge deal to some people. On the others, it's, you guys are doing too much of this. Where do you come down on where concussions are today, Dr. Cardenas?
Well, that's the perfect analogy, because even within medicine, we've seen that pendulum swing back and forth, and now we're finding it in the right place. So when I was playing football, when you were playing football, we got a pat on the butt, went right back out there, and we know that was wrong. In clinical practice, what we've seen then is a pendulum swing all the way to the other side, where now we have primary care providers, pediatricians, family practitioners who tell the kids, go into a cold, dark room, come out when you're better after they've sustained a concussion. Mm. And we now know that's also wrong. What happens is those kids then that are so involved in their physical activity, they lose touch with their friends and their family, and they become isolated, become depressed and anxious, and they actually take longer to recover than those who you start to get involved. And so in practice, we've seen a number of things is that we get kids back out into activity early, physical activity, scholastic activity, social activity, all the while keeping them away from that second hit, right? Keep avoiding another injury, but getting them engaged and helping them get better. And so now we're starting to see that come back. We're also starting to see that this is something that can be treated. Whereas before you heard rest, mm-hmm. that was the only treatment. That's not the only treatment. There are therapies that can be used. There are medicines that can help with a number of the symptoms. And we're not talking about just the short term after a concussion. We're also talking about those who've suffered multiple injuries to their brain where they have some of those long-term problems like depression, like thinking problems, like continuous headaches. These things can be treated. Maybe not cured, but we can help people.
Okay, so let's do a deep dive on this. I just want to go from the beginning. Player X doesn't matter to me. It may matter to you, okay? Football, soccer, we were even talking off the air about water polo, whatever the sport is, they get a concussion. They go through an experience on the floor, on the field. The first thing that they are looking to do as a parent, okay, is it even before then? Is it, what does your program have in place if my son or daughter gets concussed? Take us just through a timeline. And we're really talking to parents of high schools. We'll get to college and pros in a bit. Let's just start on that end.
Well, there are three prongs to the program. The first is education. The second is policy. And the last is resources. So starting from the beginning, we are providing concussion education to whom this means the most, and that is the high school athlete. We want to empower the athlete to recognize the signs and symptoms in themselves so that they can pull themselves off the field, so that they can identify it in another teammate and say, hey, there's something wrong with him. Check out Joey. This is really critical to helping others, because for many, they don't always recognize what a concussion is, that it's not, they think automatically headaches or getting knocked out or dizzy. Those are pretty straightforward ones, but there are studies that show that a lot of athletes don't recognize that a behavior change is a concussion symptom, that there can be changes in the way that you're thinking and processing information. So we start there with the fundamentals of education. Then we look at policies. And this may sound silly, but Arizona is actually a good place to have a concussion. And the reason is there are so many policies in place that have been replicated around the nation to help kids. So first off, in 2012, we created a helmet dislodgement rule that said if the helmet comes off during play, you have to go to the sidelines.
Yep.
To have it evaluated. Why? Because we saw kids who had their chin straps off because it looked cool. The helmet pops off. It does you no good. Off your head. Mm-hmm. replicated by the National Federation of High Schools and recommended for the entire country, replicated by the NCAA, recommended for entire country. We were one of the first to come out with a no reduction in contact practice. We saw in football there were tremendous numbers of concussion in the practice field. And so we said that during the preseason, no more than half the time could be contact. During the regular season, no more than a third. The following year, National Federation also came out and said this needs to be a nationwide effort to reduce contact.
And you started this.
Well, we did. So there's nothing,
there's
of
no
course.
Why.
There's nothing that gets done in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We have tremendous collaborators. So Barrett Neurological Institute is my institution. The Arizona Cardinals have been critical in providing us with these platforms. A.T. Steele University, Arizona State University, University of Arizona, all these organizers, the Arizona Interscholastic Association was crucial to providing this for us in order for us to, you know, replicate this.
All levels, pro, college, high school, the AIA, the Barrow Brain Book comes about. Tell me about that.
So Barrow Brain Book was the first concussion education program designed specifically for the high school athlete. Before 2011, there was education for coaches, education for parents, education for healthcare providers, but nothing for the athlete themselves. Mm. And so we wanted to target this population. We're actually in development of our third version. Since we started the program, over 300,000 Arizona high school athletes have completed the education.
It's online.
It is online.
So they have to take it. It's a test, right?
It is, yes. Every Arizona high school athlete must go through the educational module, and it's really important. So I don't know if you know, but I'm a former special education teacher. Mm. And so education is critically important to me. And so when we designed it, we wanted to make sure it had education fundamentals, that it wasn't just sitting back and watching a video, that it wasn't just clicking through the screens, and it was something that you engaged in. And so we use social media as that platform. So it looks like there's social media interactions. There actually isn't. But it allows these kids to really learn about concussions.
Would you consider having the parents do it as well?
Absolutely.
I got parents, that's all they watch, they go to the game, but when I ask them about, do you know what, we got dinged, which you and I know is a 70s term and should not even be thrown out there anymore.
Got your bell rung.
You got your bell rung. I mean, we've heard all that stuff. But but it seems to me that having those parents take the test would be a good call, too.
Absolutely. So they are more than welcome to take the test. What is required, and I have to hand it to the AIA for doing this, the AIA requires that every single high school athlete take it at least once in their career. There are districts that require it on an annual basis. Mm. This has been so successful, now we're replicating it in California, in the Bay Area initially, and then, you know, working our way down the Central Coast.
Wow. So the education prong, we've got that.
Yep, there's an education prong. There's a policy prong of helmet dislodgement, decreasing contact. There are all those rules, of course, in terms of targeting, et cetera, that are there. And then the last piece is a resource piece, and the resource piece is also critical. So one of the roles that I play for the NFL is the unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant. So I'm consulted to stand on the sidelines, watch for athletes if they get hit, look for signs and symptoms of concussion, pull them from the game. And of course, we had to do this in the Super Bowl, you know, one of the biggest games in the world. We also do this for ASU's football team and the women's soccer team. So the question is, how can you do something like this for high school athletes? So we created the Barrow Concussion Network, which is available for all Arizona athletic trainers to reach us remotely.
Mm.
So it's like a Skype-like tool where an athletic trainer on the field, in the athletic training room, in the locker room, can consult with us about an athlete who sustained a concussion. So we've been taking that, you know, those examples from the pros to the Division I schools, now into every single high school.
And NAIA, I'm sure, as well, or every division of college that's all out there.
Correct. So for all, you know, quite honestly, the resources that Arizona high schools have is in many ways greater than most colleges around the country.
So Javier, when a player gets injured in their sport, from that moment, I've talked to parents, we took them to urgent care, or we took them to the emergency room. There's a difference there with insurance and costs. What is the first bit of advice you would give a parent that, or a guardian, that sees one of their kids go down?
Yeah, Actually, the first bit of advice, if we look at healthcare providers, because we get so many disparate levels of advice, right? Yeah. You go to an urgent care, you got one level. You go to an emergency room, you might get another one. You go to a primary care physician, you go to a sports medicine physician, go to a neurologist, you might get five different responses. Mm. If we look at the playing field when it comes to education amongst healthcare providers, athletic trainers are the best educated.
Okay.
So like you, one of the questions that I get is, you know, what can I invest in? Can I get those new helmets? Can I get those new shoulder pads? What is the thing that I need to invest in for my kids to be safe? And it really is an athletic trainer, because the athletic trainers are the best educated on the whole, and they have access to all these things. And so going to your athletic trainer for your school, for your team,
high school,
is number
college,
one.
Pro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're required in the pros.
Yeah.
They're required in the pros. Most colleges have them. But what we see in Arizona is about 60% of the high schools have them. So So that would be number one. Now, if you do not have an athletic trainer, if your school does not have an athletic trainer, of course, encourage them to get one. But then beyond that, we look for red flags when somebody sustained a concussion as a reason to go to the emergency room. So the red flags are getting knocked out. And the reason is we are worried at the time that there might be something worse than a concussion, like a bleed. We worried about somebody who has a very rapid decline in their function. Like they're getting sleepier and less active very quickly. They have worsening headaches, and they're vomiting.
Yeah.
And of course, something more dramatic like a seizure. Those would be the red flags that you take your athlete to the emergency department. Do not pass go. Go straight there. Beyond that, you of course want to notify a healthcare professional or within the day. We used to think that you had to, keep them up all night, and that's not the case.
Rest. Yeah, that's one that I was going to ask you about.
Exactly. So
don't
rest.
Let them go to sleep.
Yep,
we got to keep
yep.
an eye on them, but that's not true.
It's not the case. It's not the case. And this came out of, quite honestly, from us as healthcare providers. You know, we used to do these things, and we still do them in the mm-hmm. intensive care unit when we have somebody who has a severe brain injury. We're monitoring them every 2 hours just to make sure there isn't a decline, if they need surgery for a swelling brain, and that got extrapolated to concussions. In fact, rest is really good for the brain, especially in that 24 to 72 hour period when you have the most changes going on. And so letting them sleep is perfectly fine. What I tell parents is that if you're really worried, tickle their feet. If they move away or if they jerk, if you kind of tickle their ribs, that's okay. You know that they're all right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to wake them all the way up and then have them go back to bed, because it can be very disruptive.
Do you give them anything? Advil, ibuprofen.
So in the
very basic here, but
yeah,
we want to make sure on this.
Absolutely,
this stuff
absolutely.
I get asked all the time.
Yeah, so we try to stay away from the ibuprofen, which is Motrin, Advil, those kinds of medications, Aleve, as well as things like aspirin, because there's a small but still a risk of things like bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so, within the first few days to a week, we say, well, go ahead and use Tylenol, because there isn't a risk of bleeding with that. In terms of other medications, the things that we prescribe, some of the things that we're using are things that we use for people who have migraines.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of risk factors, in fact, for a prolonged recovery based on the individual's history. So, for example, if you have a history of migraines, guess what? You're more likely to have worse migraines after a concussion.
Mm.
If you have a history of anxiety or depression, it's more likely to get worse. For kids who have ADHD and attention problems, they're more likely to have trouble with focus than somebody who doesn't. And so those are the things that we ask leading up to this, because we know that those are the risk factors for a longer recovery from a concussion.
How many is too many?
That's a perfect question. And there is not an answer to that. It used to be that it was, one, right? One.
Sure.
There is not a good number of concussions, first of all, to have. But, one, two, five, every brain is different. And so the approach that we have is, number one, is there any evidence, if we did any imaging of the brain, of any trauma to the brain tissue? Number two, when we are doing cognitive or thinking testing, is there any evidence of any permanent change to the way that your brain is functioning? Number three, with subsequent concussions, does it take longer and longer for you to recover? And then the last question that we ask is it taking less and less of a hit to cause a concussion. Mm. Because those are the signs that you might be, your brain is not able to recover appropriately, and that you might need to be done with sports.
Have you sat and looked at an athlete in the eye and a parent in the eye and say, you're done?
Yes, at all levels. At the youngest youth level, mm-hmm. at the high school level, at the college level, and at the professional level, we've had to have those discussions about them. And there's actually one other thing that many times isn't always appreciated in medicine, and that is sometimes the athlete's done, regardless of the number of concussions, and they have a hard time, whether it's an internal pressure or an external pressure, to be the one that says no. And so we tell them, we're going to support you as an athlete because your mental health is just as important as your physical health, and we're going to support that decision and help you through that recovery. Okay.
Help me out here with this one, Javier. And Dr. Cardenas, great to have him in studio. That is the coach who says they're all in and they care about the player, and the dad, sometimes mom, but it's usually dad, get back out there, you got to play. Are you seeing more embracing of this, or do you still find that there is a segment that is about winning first, player health second?
Absolutely. There's no question that we see that. Whether it's from the athlete, from the parent, from the coaches, we still see that. It's a lot less than it used to be.
Sure.
But we definitely see that. And really, the reason why we focus so hard on the athlete is to empower them. And we're finding more and more athletes that are empowered. Mm-hmm. We're finding more and more athletes that have a better understanding about concussion than their parents did and do, and also than their coaches. We see more self-reporting, especially in the younger athletes. So even the pros, those who are the more veteran players, they're still very stoic. Mm-hmm. Whereas the younger ones coming up, they know that part of this game, if I want to play next year and the years following, this is my career now, I've got to preserve my brain in order to do so. So we see them come forward much more than we used to.
Help me out on this backside of the career. Backside of the career is over. It doesn't matter if it's high school, college, or pro. Lasting impact, lasting effects, what can be done? What is it you see that can be done to help in a therapy rehab mode?
So we're in a very interesting time when it comes to chronic injuries and multiple injuries. And I think, once again, this is, you know, you started the show off kind of illustrating how far things have come in terms of the way that people perceive concussions. And before, it was the initial injury and worried about second impact syndrome, which you get another injury before you recover, your brain swells, and there's a risk of death. To now, yeah, okay, so I didn't suffer second impact syndrome, but I've suffered multiple concussions. What does my life look like 10 to 20 years down the
line? Correct.
And that is a very sophisticated thought that comes from high schoolers now. Mm. And it's fantastic to hear. The challenge is we don't know all the answers. What we are worried about is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, when we have multiple hits to the head. And we've known this about this in boxers. It was very well described in boxers. But even in boxers, it wasn't 100%. What we're seeing is that there's a much more subtle version of CTE, the modern CTE, which still causes damage to the brain and dysfunction. And a lot of it is characterized by the behavior, things like depression, anxiety, leading to terrible things like suicide. We see chronic headaches. We see difficulty with thinking, trouble with memory.
Starburst, got to be in a dark room, ringing of ears. I've
exactly.
heard that from my daughter's
Absolutely.
Friends who've all played sports and
Absolutely.
Even her herself a little bit. Yeah.
So we see those things, and the trouble is we cannot, at this stage, diagnose CTE in a living person. Only once they've died and we can look at their brains. But even to those who come into the clinic and are worried about that, what we talk to them about is dying from something like that or living with it. Because the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter what neurological disease you might have, but there are things that you can live with and be treated for. Cured, probably not, but definitely helped. So those, the things like ringing in the ears, there are treatments for that. The things like the headaches and migraines, there's treatment. There's treatment for depression so it doesn't lead to suicide. Mm-hmm. There's treatment for thinking problems, things like speech, cognitive therapy, and even some medicines that can help with that. Is it going to get you back to 100%? It isn't. We know that, but it doesn't mean that you stand still and let it take your life.
A couple other questions. You mentioned it briefly about new helmets, new technology. How much do you buy into that from a research standpoint? Is it getting better? You should invest in that extra amount for that helmet, or let's wait on all this. We're out of new technology and equipment.
When it comes to new technology and equipment, what we are actually going to see over the next few years is an exponential improvement in headgear. And the reason is what we've seen over the last decade or two decades is a very linear improvement in helmet technology. So the padding's gotten thicker and the helmet's gotten smoother and the shell is able to absorb more of that energy. Or, they've gone to increasing the protection around the mandible to address some of the rotational injuries. And they have gotten better. There's not a question about that. But it's been a very linear progression. What we are going to see is an exponential one. And the reason is you're going to see a lot of technology and investments in materials. So materials that can absorb and distribute forces around the head like no others. Materials that might have crumple zones like you see in cars. Mm. That might be able to be replaced. So certain parts of the helmet that might get the most hits or have that sustain that highest impact hit, you pop out a piece and you pop in another. So those are the things that we are going to see over the next few years that are going to change the materials. Same is true for shoulder pads. People often ignore the shoulder pads, but in fact, there might be technologies that tie the shoulder pads into the helmets so that you can change this force distribution. And you have to also think that when people are getting hit now, because we're avoiding a helmet-to-helmet collision, but what comes next? The shoulder.
Yeah.
If you have a shoulder pad that has no compliance, then you're delivering a force to the opponent's head that is far greater and more likely to cause a concussion. So you have to change all these other elements. Things like turf and the ground, so that when your head hits the ground, it's not as impactful as
the second hit too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So those are things that we're going to see, and I'm actually pretty excited because while a lot of the energy and money is focused at the professional level, the truth of the matter is it's going to help kids. Because all of it's going to trickle down to those populations.
Anything else you want to add that I haven't asked you about this topic? It's like, Brad, okay, we've gone through a lot of stuff, but here's what is out there that parents should know, players should know, or maybe I've asked you everything, but do you have anything else you want to add on this?
Well, a thing that comes up quite often is the future of concussion diagnosis and recovery, especially when it comes to biomarkers. So biomarkers are interesting because many people think that they have to be blood-based biomarkers. That's usually what we think of. You do something in the blood or in the saliva or in the urine, and you can diagnose a concussion. So that's number one. When in fact there are different other biomarkers, things like MRI scans or different ways to identify concussion. But what's most important actually is not so much the diagnosis of a concussion, because the mantra is when in doubt, sit them out. So we've been pulling many more athletes than we used to because the threshold for that diagnosis has dropped, which is good. It needs to happen. But what's more important and much more difficult is when has that athlete recovered objectively? When has their brain healed? And can we know for sure? And so I think the other thing that's going to come out in the science is we're going to see these, what we perceive now as people who are fast healers and people who are long healers, we're going to have a way to measure that and say, okay, now you can actually go back in. Or those other athletes who might not express symptoms of a concussion, who suffer subconcussive hits and are still having damage to their brain, that we're going to be able to pull them out. They might not even know that they've had a concussion, rest them, get them better, and then send them back when they're safe. I think that's where things are heading.
Well, it's interesting because I do a recruiting show every week. So I have parents that ask me, and it's the kids being recruited from around the state at all levels, do we need to let these colleges know about our concussion history? They know. They should know. But is that something that you would want to be out there as well, your medical history in terms of how many concussions. I know I'm changing gears on you, but it just popped
in
my head.
Yeah, no, the answer is yes. The medical staff at those colleges, and then from those colleges to those professionals, they are interested in keeping them healthy. They need to know their history so that they know their risk. The coaches don't need to know. They should not be involved in any of the medical care anyway. Mm. But the medical professionals need to know about that health history. They also need to recognize that the concussion numbers are going to go up because that threshold of concussion has dropped. So before we used to say, well, you got knocked out, you had a concussion. That's less than 10%. So now, if somebody smells funny, looks funny, acts funny after a hit, then they are diagnosed with a concussion and pulled. And I think that's appropriate. In fact, to pull them specifically, the diagnosis, maybe not so much, because that might come within the next few hours or even few days. But to recognize that the numbers are going to go up because our threshold has dropped is important on the medical side. When these kids are coming in, they may have had 5-6 concussions. It's different than somebody who 5-10 years ago came in and they only had one, when in fact that one may have had much more.
Yeah. So the point is, do report, because I get asked this all the time on our recruiting segment. That's how it works. I appreciate you coming in and all the insight. Love to have you back in sometime.
Anytime.
We could do 20 minutes just on mapping. You know, I love that stuff. Appreciate it.
Thank you.